Listener supported. WNYC Studios. Hey.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now happening on our website, your anecdotal census of people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. As the official census takers make their rounds from now through summer to collect those 10-question forms, we are collecting your stories of change in our communities over the last decade. We have a separate page for each county in our listening area. This week, we're focusing especially on Bergen County. We want all you Bergen County listeners to add something about how your community has changed over the decade. For example, Carol in Tenafly wrote, "While there certainly have been demographic changes, I'd have to say the overall most notable change in Bergen County, especially eastern Bergen County where I live, has been traffic. I often joke that the county has gotten so crowded that we need a certain number of people out in cars just to fit everyone in the physical space of Bergen County." Then she writes, "Joking aside, one of the more disturbing aspects of all this traffic is that there is no place for people to walk to school or bicycle safely." So that's from our People's History page from Carol and Tenafly. We'll talk on the air about how Bergen County has changed on Tuesday's show. In the meantime, we want all you Bergen County listeners to add something to the page about how your community has changed, demographically, politically, whatever, and you know who you are, from Edgewater to Mahwah. Please join us in creating your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. Go to WNYC.org. And click on Brian Lehrer Show. Well, right now we begin a month-long series on the identity of being American, as seen through the eyes of Barrett Tunde Thurston and many of you. Thurston, some of you know, is a comedian and blogger who founded the African-American-oriented political site Jack and Jill Politics and who kind of moonlights as the web and politics editor at The Onion. Barrett Tunde, welcome back to WNYC. We're so excited to have you here for every Thursday in the month of May.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. Just a quick correction. I'm the co-founder of Jack and Jill Politics.
Co-founder. I don't want to giving, cause a messed up. Props to your colleagues.
Absolutely. It's good to be in the studio.
And let's
love
start,
your theme music.
Thank you very much. And let's start with a little self-identification, a little bit more.
Yeah.
For people who don't know your work, you're serious sometimes. You're funny most of the time.
We'll see how it turns out today, but that's about the right balance. I mean, I've been doing stand-up comedy for just over 8 years. My anniversary was a few weeks ago, but I also care. So I've been an activist. I definitely campaigned on my own time for Obama. I vote. I pay taxes most of the time. So I'm.
And Jack and Jill is not mostly a comedy site. The Onion is. Jack and Jill is not.
Jack and Jill Politics is a very, you know, pretty straight political analysis with a lot of cleverness and wit, but it's certainly not a comedy site, though it may cause you to laugh sometimes. There's a big watermelon on the page.
So let's dive in to the idea of being American. There are probably about as many definitions for what it means to identify American as there are Americans. But you think that something fundamental about identity is being resolved in the Arizona immigration law debate, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what you have, and I think there's an interesting overlap between what's happening in Arizona, what you see happening as a reaction to Obama, what you see in a reaction in the growth of this very angry Tea Party, and the Pew study which came out recently, which talked about the anger in the American electorate, which was largely in certain segments of the white American electorate. There's a sense of loss. There's a sense of like, this is not my America. You keep hearing this refrain. And no one's quite clearly defining what it is, but it's certainly not the demographically trending browner, younger America that makes people very comfortable. There's a sense of America's changing, and I'm not a part of that change, and I'm a little concerned about that.
And this is going to be a big discussion among many of our listeners with us, so we're going to open up the phones right now, and we'll deal with different aspects of this question every Thursday in May with Barrett Tunde Thurston. So call in and reflect on your own version of what it means to be American. How do you identify with that term? What does it really mean to you? Did the Arizona immigration law dust up make you think about that question anew or any differently? And what about any of you who fit in to that large portion in the Pew survey who feels like an America that you know and value is getting lost since the recession and the bailout and the health care law and maybe on another side of politics from the Arizona immigration law? 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. Starting on this series very basically, what does it mean to you to be an American? How do you identify with that term? And if you're an immigrant, we definitely want to hear from you. African-American, Latino, Asian-American, love to get a lot of different ethnic diversity and all other kinds of diversity into this mix. 212-433-9692 for Baratunde Thurston, or post to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. Baratunde, the Consortium for Police Leadership and Equity, which is a research group that focuses on police and racial profiling, is finishing up a report that you've been given access to. Can you tell us a little bit about the report, which focuses on an immigration law, not in Arizona, but coming to the fore in Utah right now, is trying to show?
Absolutely. Utah has SB 81, which is much more narrow in scope versus the Arizona law, but it's about cross-deputizing police officials as federal immigration agents and having them do checks on the legal status of people who are in the criminal justice system. So if they've been pulled over for a DUI or they're in a jail, what the study looks at is what is the effect of a law like this on law enforcement and on its relationship with the community. And what you're finding in Arizona, what you found in Utah, with a lot of sheriffs coming out big time saying, we don't want to do this job. This may be a failure of the federal government, but it undermines our ability to keep the community safe when people feel threatened by police, not necessarily keeping communities safer, but by doing intimidation tactics or paperwork, essentially doing the job maybe the federal government was supposed to do. So what the study really looks at is this going to reduce immigration? Is it going to reduce crime? Or does it have some softer value?
Tell us a little bit more about this idea of cross-deputization.
Yeah.
The phrase that's in the potential Utah immigration law?
Well, and once again, there's a law up in Utah which looks a lot like Arizona that's being proposed, but there's an existing one on the books that is already narrower in scope. And essentially, it's what Sheriff Arpaio in Arizona wants to do. The government's not doing anything, so let's us as local and state police take this immigration law and enact it ourselves. And what it asks the police to do is become federal immigration enforcers, to determine the citizenship status of reasonably suspicious people, which is a very vague sort of term, and decide whether they should stay or they should go. And the problem that this creates is, one, you've really reduced the level of crime reporting. You know, whether immigrants, whether legal or not, don't trust whether or not they can go to the cops if that cop is then going to ask them to show me your papers. And that makes the whole community a lot less safe.
John in Farmingdale, you're on WNYC. John, thanks a lot for calling.
Okay, well, two things. It is kind of sad that we're losing our white European identity. It was probably inevitable, but it's no one voted on this. And if you think about it, a lot of it was due to illegal immigration. But let that pass, because that eventually would have gone by the wayside. I'm a strong defender of the Arizona law, because they're going to stop people only with reasonable suspicion. And look, if certain immigrants do not have their documentation, they really shouldn't be here. And it's that simple. It's a reasonable law. The federal government wasn't doing anything about it, and no one was sealing the border. So
let me separate those two things for a minute, John. The Arizona law is one thing, and illegal immigration is one thing. But when you talk about losing our white identity, what is that white identity? Why is that the American identity rather than, say, the identity with the Constitution and our set of laws and values?
Well, because predominantly we were settled by white Europeans in America. There's nothing deep about it, nothing constitutional about it. It's just a cultural fact.
And what is it in white identity that you think would get lost? As whites are headed to be a minority in the country, there would be no majority in the country if trends prevail in a few decades. What is it that would be lost? What are the qualities of that white?
A certain kind of attitude towards mankind, a kind of Western ideal that was developed in Europe and grew in America. I suspect that is what I'm getting at, yeah.
John, thank you very much.
Okay.
Baratunde.
I have to say I, too, feel a deep loss of my white European identity as an American. I mean, look, America's a great idea, and we've struggled for centuries to kind of live up to that ideal. And that ideal is not so much based in specific European culture. It's enshrined in all of these documents, which have very lofty goals of equality and under the law that we all sort of ascribe to when we come here or when we're brought here. So I think that's the general goal of American identity. What it practically means is we have the right to eat double fried foods and watch a lot of reality television and burn fossil fuels at an alarming rate. And that's something that I think all cultures sort of agree on.
That's the onion side of Baratunde coming
that's
out.
That's just the truth coming
right
out.
There. Sarah in Rego Park, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I grew up in Latin America. My father worked for the United Nations, so my parents are American. And my mother was constantly harping on my father to just go back to the United States, where things were clean and they weren't corrupt and nobody would take bribes and things like whatever she saw in daily life where we were would never happen. So I've lived in the United States for a long time now. And either my mother saw things through very rose-colored glasses, or I feel like we have a corruption and an ability to, like, get away with what you can has seeped into our society. And I don't think it has anything to do with immigration, because I think a lot of those white men, WASP people, are some of the ones who are the most corrupt. So I don't think it has to do with who's here. I just wonder whether we've lost that. And I also just, my husband is Yugoslav, and I remember one of his, one of the people around him said, I tried to go to the United States in the 70s and start a business, and nobody would take my bribes. And I couldn't believe that a place functioned like this. And I wonder what would happen if somebody came and tried to start a business today, and whether he would have the same reaction.
Why do you think we're losing that clean government? That's what you're talking about as a part of American identity.
I'm not only talking about clean government. I'm just talking about people having an expectation of honesty. Mm-hmm. And there's something about, in some other cultures, and I hate to, you know, paint other cultures completely, but there is this exultation at having gotten the man and gotten away with it. And my mother told me that that's not how Americans felt, because Americans were invested in their own country and didn't feel like it was a victory to beat, you know, to beat the system. Mm.
Sarah, thank you very much.
That is an amazing story. Like, what kind of country doesn't accept my bribes? I mean, there's a certain deep truth to the idea that in this country in general, we fight one another with laws. There's not an outbreak of massive amounts of violence to settle disputes. We've got courts and other systems of adjudication to solve these problems, street fights notwithstanding, military and police brutality notwithstanding. So the sense of loss that she's talking about, I think, is something that a lot of people can identify with. I would say that depending on what part of the population you were a part of throughout this country's history, that sense of loss may not be as deep for
right.
some as for others.
Because when she talks, and she put it very eloquently, but that sense of identifying with the man, you don't want to get over on the man
right.
because the man is the system and the system is us. That would be a great system. Probably not a lot of your ancestors identified with the man.
Not necessarily. Yeah, maybe with the bro, but not the man.
How do you define being American? How do you start other than eating deep fried foods?
You know, I was being halfway flippant when I described that. I mean, I do think that there's, when we're conscious about it, mostly being American is not thinking about being American. There's a sort of luxury of being here where it's assumed that we're the best. We'll always be the best. We've probably always been the best. And so there's a sense of superiority, not in a horribly negative sense, but in a, I know what I've got it going on. I'm on the winning team. And that's definitely a part of America. There's a sense of infinite possibility, even if in reality that possibility is the highest parts of that possibility are only available to a very few who are quite lucky, honestly. But the idea that anybody can make it is certainly a big part of American identity that keeps us all going.
And politically, that's yeah. one of the reasons why so many middle-class people and working-class people rebel against the idea of higher taxes on the wealthy, because they think that's going to be me in
eventually,
20 years.
Exactly. So they're hedging against future possible income, you know, that would be taken away from them.
I want to play a clip of Al Sharpton from Arizona yesterday,
yeah.
weighing in on the immigration issue. And it really gets to a question of identity, because if people are thinking, well, what investment do African Americans have in protecting illegal Mexican immigrants in Arizona who may be taking some of their low-paying jobs? Here's what Al Sharpton had to say.
Open the door to a double standard for anybody. You open the door for a double standard
extra dark. We all look Mexican.
Poet talk about, and comedian Al Sharpton.
Talk about a guy who combines the serious with the funny.
Yeah.
And we just have 30 seconds left for today. We'll pick this up next Thursday. But, you know, look, a lot of black leaders are in solidarity with illegal immigrants, but I can get a board full of black callers anytime saying those people are competing with me for work.
No, that's the truth. That's part of the complexity of being black in America. I think what Al Sharpton points out, and I don't always agree with him, but the point is you don't want any kind of double standard, and you certainly don't want to have some liberal concept of reasonable suspicion to pull someone over. I think if there's anything black people understand is that we are not all the same, but the cops don't always know that difference.
Baratunde Thurston, you can see his work at Jack and Jill Politics. Also, he's the web and politics editor at The Onion, and he will be back with us to talk about different aspects of American identity and take your calls on that every Thursday in this month of May. Talk to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.